Now I want to turn to something very modern. Let's say what's happening now in psychiatry. Some years ago, well, 3 or 4 years ago, Mr. Michael Murphy, who is the director at Esalen, wrote to me in New York and said he'd like to have me come there and give a lecture on schizophrenia. Well, I said, Mike, I don't know anything about schizophrenia. How would James Joyce be? And he said, well, that would be just fine. So you can come and give a whole series of lectures on James Joyce, but I want you to give a lecture on schizophrenia anyhow. Well, I thought, well, okay, you know, in a certain way. And he said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. You and Dr. John Perry, who is a psychiatrist in San Francisco, can have a dual lecture, and you can lecture on mythology, and he'll lecture on schizophrenia, and you're going to find out something. So I thought, well, that's a very nice invitation. Then shortly before the time came for me to engage in this adventure, I received from Dr. Perry a couple of papers that he'd written on the imagery of schizophrenia. That is to say, these poor people who've lost their egos totally have cracked off into the realm of the abyss, out of which the whole world came, scribbling little figures and so forth, saying strange things, bringing forth strange images. He showed me that these images of schizophrenia were exactly the ones that I had presented in The Hero with a Thousand Faces, which was simply a compendium of mythological motifs. That is to say, the imagery of world mythology lives right in the psyche and is the world into which the schizophrenic drops. Well, it was a very exciting weekend for me, I tell you. Then when I got back to New York, another psychiatrist invited me to discuss a paper that he had written on schizophrenia, LSD, mysticism, and these things that students were doing those years. I found myself in a very interesting environment with him. And what I learned there was that the mystical experience is very much that of the schizophrenic, except that the mystic knows how to swim in the waters in which the schizophrenic drowns. Well, now, recently, I've received some papers from psychiatrists who are working on therapy by means of LSD. That is to say, people in psychiatric trouble receiving shots, sometimes up to 90 shots, very carefully tuned and so forth, to break down resistances and so on, with the doctor following very closely. And as a result of this, the structuring of the symbology of the human psyche is beginning to come out now in a very clear way. There's a book that I've recently, I think I was talking about it this afternoon to some of you who are here, by Masters and Houston, called The Varieties of Psychedelic Experience. I just want to say something about what these levels are so that you will be able to see something of its relationship to the Kundalini business. The first level of experience is essentially an aesthetic one. There are accounts of, I remember one very amusing thing, of four people who were bridge fans, just nutty about bridge, who were given these shots and were made to promise that after they had the psychedelic shot, they would play a bridge game. So here they're old hands with cards, you know, all the time. So the cards are dealt out, and when they open the cards, they are so enchanted by the marvel of the beauty of those things, which they had never even seen shining this way before. There was no bridge game. Now, this is what's known as aesthetic arrest. And it's what happened to Dante when he saw Beatrice. And this is what falling in love is. And falling in love with the world. The senses are suddenly peeled, and the radiance of any old thing shines through. More accounts from these people who, under these influences, of the awakening of the senses to the world. And then when they come out of it, they realize that was there all the time. This is the realm of the artist's awakening, aesthetic arrest. No longer are you using the thing. No longer do you even know what its name is. You are simply looking at this phenomenon, and every phenomenon is a gate to the eon of the gods, if you will open your eyes. Blake's wonderful word, that when the doors of perception are cleansed, everything is seen as it truly is, namely infinite. And that, of course, was the origin of the title of Huxley's book, The Doors of Perception. When they're cleansed, the world opens. That's the first level. The next level of experience is that of the Freudian analysis. It is memory images, analysis of their meaning, the psychological complexity of your personal life and unconscious. Here you are in the realm that Jung calls the personal unconscious, which has to do with the mix-up of your own miserable biography. Everything that went wrong is down there, you've tucked it away, and plop, it comes up, and you feel very badly about it. Now, this is all very personal and really uninteresting, except to you and the doctor who's getting the money. The third level now is the beginning of real trouble. You are getting into a realm that is that of the mythological archetypes that live in you, those psychiatric, psychotic forms that come out in the lunatic asylum. And they are of two aspects. The first is the one that you hit now on level three, where they are shattering your ego, shattering your whole ego world. This is the bad trip. This is when everything is smashing you up and you're still holding on to you. If you know those Tibetan tankas, this is those fierce, horrendous creatures that appear at the bottom of the tankas in fire with weapons. These are the cherubim at the gate to the Garden of Eden that are saying, if you're going to experience immortal life, you must get rid of that ego of yours. The fourth, fourth level is that of simple physical distress. The body is out of control and is rather unattractive. Next, we get down to centers 5 and 6. At 5, those powers of the psychiatric, of the psychotic breakup begin to be experienced in their bliss. You begin to get the positive aspect. You begin to realize that you are breaking through to the ground of your own truth and being, to an integrating final experience where this world of you will come into either relationship or union with the world of true and ultimate, your true and ultimate base or being. And then this sixth and final level is that of either unity or harmonious relationship with the ground. Now, this is the final problem in the interpretation of symbols. Can we say that the divine power is immanent in all beings? Can we say with the Indian Upanishad, Tattvamasi, you are it? This is the unitary experience of the top chakra. Or is that a false notion? And do we have to say the soul beholds its God? That is to say, are we to experience only a relationship to the divine, or are we to experience an identity with it? These are the two schools, West and East. In the world of our religious heritage, whether it's Jewish or Christian or Muslim, the divine and the human are not the same. God is the creator, and when we turn inward, we do not find the divine. We find a created soul, which may or may not be in proper relationship to the divine. In that case, the ultimate experience is relationship to the divine. In the other view, what we break through to in our own depth is the divine. There is the unitary experience. And in India, you see how easy it is. Do you like, as Ramakrishna used to say, do you like to talk about God with or without form? Do you like to talk about it in these terms or in these terms? But since the ultimate transcendence transcends all terms. Either one's correct or either one's wrong. Take it or leave it. When you're talking about things that can't be talked about, don't become too pernickety about definitions. So any way you want to get it your way, and then that will be about the best you can ask for. So what I'm suggesting is that the ways of reading this simple symbol of the Garden of Paradise and the fall in paradise are relative to any position you want to assume. You can take the orthodox, original, historical position. With that, it seems to me you really are in trouble. Or you can take the moralizing, theological position of what happened in the garden, what does it symbolize in the way of man's relationship to God. Or you can take the Buddhist way, which tells you this is a psychological problem, not a moral problem at all. It's a matter of you and your ego and where it is. And if you take that, then you have these seven stages on up, and you can stop in any way, particularly from the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh chakras, and read the symbols in those terms. Or you can go to a lunatic asylum and handle the whole thing in terms of your own distress. Or you can ask your psychoanalyst and he'll give you 1, 2, 3 as the chakra interpretations. These symbols are susceptible to all kinds of readings. There is no single way to read a rich symbol. There is no single way to read life. Life does not have a meaning. Meanings are experienced. Read into life. So when you go around saying, I want to find the meaning of life, the best thing to say is, let me invent a meaning for life and go along with that until I find out it's not a very good meaning after all, and let's get a better one. The Buddha himself is called the Tathagata, the one thus come. Life is Tathagata. It is thus come. And it's a mystery. It's a tremendous mystery.